Welcome to the Chasing Tomorrow podcast, episode 146. It's Don and I again. I know he abandoned me last week, but we got him back here off the trail or wherever the heck he was. I don't know. He's always too busy for me to keep track of. But yeah, we're going to jump into a couple of things that are happening this month. June's a big month for Western states, and it's also a month where we're both sort of thinking about, you know, what's next on the race horizon, some thoughts about coaching and decision making, and, you know, a good episode just to sort of kick back and enjoy conversation. So, Don, how are you?
Joe, I'm good. It's funny you saying that I'm so busy you can't keep track of me, when, you know, the only way I can keep track of you is looking at Strava and it tells me where the heck you ran today. So I got at least you usually have a pretty good idea where I am, even if I'm busy.
Yeah, I do. Like, you know, it's funny, I for a long time, like, you know, you don't want to use Strava, we've talked about that, but I have a very distributed friend group, and they actually, like, every once in a while I'll see them, like, I truly like that you use Strava, because then I see where you are. And like, oh, you were in Colorado, you were in Arizona, you were in Oregon, you were in, like, so like, yeah, it's pretty fun to be able to sort of at least see that. So yeah, I guess there's a multiplicative benefit of the location part of it.
Yeah. Well, I'm relearning Strava. I'm back on there. You can see my training. I'm starting to appreciate it a little bit as a community side of things, and letting my brain go a little bit and not really care what people think of my training. So it's,
do you ever change, like, you know, it says morning run, afternoon run. Do you ever customize what it says?
I've been playing with that lately just for fun, right? Like, it's been pouring rain here in Colorado I mean, it's been three straight weeks of running in the rain in the afternoon. So I was, my titles were some variation of, like, another day, another, you know, wet, hanging my clothes up when I get home, and just stuff like that. And it's interesting because, not that I'm chasing likes and kudos and stuff like that on Strava, I really don't care. But if you change the title, it's like a three times more interaction for me anyways than if I just leave it. So I'm always, like, tracking the data and the trends, and that's just more of an interesting.
I enjoy reading it because then it says something, and I find it also, for me, I often write it because then I would remember what that run was like.
Yep.
You know, yeah. Oh my gosh, it was really windy this morning, kind of thing. Or it's fun in that way. And then the other people who are looking at it, I think you do read it. Actually, probably, yeah, almost more than looking at the route. It's like, oh, look at that. You know, it was a recovery run today or whatever. So
exactly. I've been, since Cocodona, we'll get into this a little bit, but I'm working with a coach right now, and through the recovery process, he's been really big on heart rate tracking and keeping my heart rate really low for some of these recovery runs. So I'm always calling out in the thing, like, hey, like this, like, and it's almost like, it's like 11 minute pace on some of these runs. It's like, yeah, I almost kind of feel, and this is getting back to, you know, maybe why I got off Strava, but I feel like I have to say, hey, this is a low heart rate run. I did one the other day that I was at, I started at 10,300 feet, and my route took me up over 11,000 feet and back. So a low point of my entire run was 10,300 feet. And I just call it as, like, it's really hard to keep a low heart rate at, you know, 11,000 feet for an hour and a half. It's so hard.
Really training hard on the heart rate stuff and trying to keep in zone two. And the coach always said, you know, if you're going up the hill and your heart rate starts going up, just walk. I'm like, what do you mean walk? Like,
yeah.
I'm not, that's not. And they, like, would just yell at me back, like, just walk. Like, this is a systems thing, right?
Yep.
Get out of your head. We're talking about a system. And, you know, we know this, like, what it was, Mark Allen wrote, you know, run slow to get fast.
Yep.
And it does really work, but it doesn't work if you only do it once. You actually have to do it on a continued basis to really build the aerobic base.
Right.
Fat burning, et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah. But it's funny because, like, when it really matters, that 11-minute pace turns into 7 for you.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. And it's been about a month of almost all of my runs being below 140 heart rate. And so I've been averaging right around, like, 131 to 134 or something like that, give or take. And I'm starting to speed up at those paces. And it's kind of, there's the Maffetone method, that is kind of like low heart rate centric that a lot of people swear by. There's been some research that have debunked a lot of it, but there's still validity in the low heart rate. And then it'll be really interesting. Actually, tomorrow I am going to do a 20-minute all out effort.
Oh,
as a threshold test. And it's one, it's going to be absolutely miserable because I haven't done it. I mean, I can't tell you the last time I did a 5K or a hard 20 something minute effort. I mean, it's been years. So, one, I'm dreading it, but two, it'll be really interesting to see what the heart rate does during that based on the past month of low heart rate focused training. The other element here is I'm doing it back in Denver area. So I'm going to do it at 5,000, 6,000 feet and a slight uphill. So those are the conditions that I've been given to do this test, and it'll be interesting. I've really never trained by heart rate. I've always trained by RPE, and now I'm trying to be very, very strict in heart rate. And tomorrow will be the first day in the last month that I can just let the horses run and see what happens.
How much of a warm up will you do?
I warm up slow, so I'll probably do like 3 miles, 4 miles, maybe. I mean, it'll be longer. The warm up will be long, like distance wise and time wise, much longer than the actual effort.
Mm. But important, right? If you're going to go hard, it's hard to go hard in the beginning at the same level.
Yeah.
The ramp tests always were really not fun on the treadmill. You know, try and find max heart rate. So you increase the speed of the treadmill, then you increase the elevation.
Slowly goes up, yeah.
It'll just basically throw up, and then you keep going. So, yeah, that should be fun. How will you keep the pace? Like, just keep looking at your watch?
And that's the challenge, Joe, is it? I can't tell you the last time I had to pace for something like this. So I have no idea. I think the first mile I'll either be too fast or too conservative. I don't think there's any chance I'm going to be spot on the first mile. If I think back to all the 5Ks I've done in my life, it's always, I go out too hard, I die in the middle mile, and then I have a hard kick. And that's pretty much consistently every 5K I've ever done as an adult. And I'm expecting somewhere around 5K because it's a little lower elevation, but it's uphill. So, that'd be what, a 6.5 minute pace. Yeah. Is right at 20 minutes. So I'm sure I'll go out too fast, and I'll probably run like a 5:50 first mile and then have a miserable second mile and then try to salvage something on the third mile.
Last weekend I went to the track and ran 10 miles on the track. I haven't done that in a while, and it was easy pace. And everyone says, oh, my God, I don't know how you can go around. I'm like, this is easier than anything. Like, just to run around a track, like, you can't even really fall. Like, nothing can go wrong. Right. And you I only have 10 more to go. I find it to be some of the easiest, like, and everyone finds it hard. What do you think about that?
Well, I quite like running on the track. Because, like you said, it's the easiest thing in the world to pace, to get slotted in. I actually finished up, I was running last weekend, 2 weekends ago here in Fairplay, and I was running and I got to a spot on the road I was on that was just soaking wet and muddy. And I just, because we've had so much rain, I can't keep going on this road. So I turned around and I started from downtown Fairplay. And so I cut maybe like 40 minutes, I guess it was 50 minutes off of what should have been an out and back. And I had to run right past the track in town. And so I did 50 minutes on the track, just easy peasy. I think it's easy. I laughed when you said you can't get hurt on the track. One of the worst injuries I've ever had in my life was running track in high school. It was in an 800 and I kind of got pushed to the inside of the track. And you know that little lip where lip goes, and then it's like I got pushed and I stepped off of that and my wrist landed right on that lip and I shattered my wrist completely. And I had to have two surgeries on it to repair it. And I still don't have full range of motion in my wrist. So it was a total freak accident, right? it just makes me laugh now looking back.
I'm talking about just on a Sunday morning.
Yeah.
It's pretty healthy. And
yes.
If you have a track near wherever you live, go give it a try and say, I'm going to go run four laps and then say, you know, I should do four more. And just you start to get into a nice rhythm.
And it's good mental strength training too, right? It's one of those things that it is harder mentally, right? Like if you can't zone out, it's hard, but it kind of teaches you, at least for me, it teaches you to be better at zoning out so that when race day comes and I need to suffer a little bit more, I've actually developed a whole skill set that I never had before by running on the track. And obviously I've doubled down on that skill set running so much on the treadmill, but it's a step above the treadmill as far as, you know, enjoyability, because you're still outside and you're still, you know, physically moving.
That's good. But, I liked it. It was fun.
And at the end of the day, 99% of the tracks you're going to find are a public entity, right? Like they're publicly funded and open. And this is one of the things that I would recommend if you're thinking about the track, go like, well, it's the summer, so you shouldn't have a problem going any time of the day. But if you're going during, you know, school hours, just be cognizant. You're either going well before school or maybe even after school. If there's something going on in the field, don't go. But for the most part, I've run on pretty much every track in every city I've ever been to and have never once had a single issue.
Yeah.
So it's a little intimidating sometimes to go to the track, but just know that it's publicly funded. It's your track to go run on.
Yeah, I like it. We'll do some more. So you hired a coach.
So I did.
About this. What's going on?
Yeah, so it's interesting. I've self-coached for the last almost 2 years now, and it's gone mostly well. But I've gotten to the point where I want to do two things. I want to push really, really hard again to go fast for Javelina. I want to stay healthy during that, of course. But I also, at some point, need to figure out what decisions in my life that I need to just outsource a little bit. We've talked in a past episode about decision fatigue and prioritizing, you know, what are the decisions in my life that I have to make and what are the decisions that I can maybe simplify or allow somebody else to make. So I looked at it as I have this really big goal that I want for the end of the year. I'm an alpha athlete. I train, like I want to just go. And at some point I decided it was going to be best for me and my training block to hire somebody to program workouts, one, so I don't have to decide what I wanted to do that day. That takes that decision off of my plate. And two, it's going to be somebody that's overlooking my data, my heart rate, and my performances to make sure I'm staying healthy. And they're going to, like, he's going to know when to push and when to not. And so it's really a dual purpose decision that I made for my best summer possible, both staying healthy and staying mentally sane as I take on a lot at work and in other areas in life.
It's good. I think, you know, we've both done that, right? I think probably it'd be hard to imagine if I don't think my performance has ever been better than when I had a coach. That's always been my best performance. And, you know, it is, you do coaching too. I do a little bit. And for the people that I help, they like the same thing. They're like, I just want someone to tell me because I don't want to think about it. It's such a weird thing, right? It's like, why would that matter? But it just does change
it. Does.
The accountability to someone else sort of raises the bar of what we're willing to go and do. Like, remember when 100%. I said to you, I wanted to break 24 hours for the 100 and you gave me a plan and I broke 24 hours for the 100 and the plan, I still remember the first thing is like, okay, run 5 miles at a 7:30 pace. And I'm like, ha, ha, ha. And then I was like, yeah, but you built me like right to it. And it wasn't even that hard when I went and did it. But like, I probably wouldn't have put that in, you know, the strides and the intervals and also just sort of the feedback. Sometimes it's good for someone to say to you. And so,
And I think the other really interesting thing that I've found is even if they would have programmed 100% of the things that I did on race day, there is somebody else. Like, obviously your friends are there, your family there that are cheering for you and they'll love you no matter what, if you first or DNF, but like professionally, you've paid this person to get you to the finish line. Like, that person has like a stake in the game, and you know that like they're watching you. So I've felt that. Like I remember at the end of Tunnel Hill when I ran my 13:16, and I was like I was wanting to slow down, but I was like, I know my coach is watching me. Right? That was the last race I've ever had a coach, and there is some inherent motivation at that point. It's like, nope, can't do it. They'll be disappointed in me. And so right. there's just a lot of reasons. That's not the, I mean, that's just like a bonus of having a coach. That is not the reason to buy a coach, but or pay for a coach, but it's a good little race day motivator.
Yeah, no, it's all connected. So the first coach I had, Karen Smart, she was the world champion in Kona in 95. And, you know, when I didn't know what the heck I was doing, and one weekend I came in and she's like, so what'd you do this weekend? I said, oh, I did this Criterium race. And she just literally screamed at me, like, what's the matter with you? Like,
yeah.
And the program I gave you, you're not supposed to go race. Right. Like, we're building you towards this. Like, I'm like, but I was having fun. And she just said, don't ever do that again. But, like, what did I know? Like, how would I know that that race in the middle was blowing up a plan? And that's the other part is, like, some of it we don't even know in the beginning. So the coach is helpful. And it's not just a plan that I can download off the internet. It's actually
I think an important thing that we could kind of transition into this conversation a little bit is to maybe how to find a coach. That's one of the things that I've, you know, people that I've talked to, and you know, whether I coach them or I talk to them about finding somebody that's maybe in their sport specific or somebody that you know they don't even know, because sometimes it's easier to work with somebody you don't know. It's hard to know what to look for. So I'll share what I sat down and I said, this is what I wanted to coach. And the reason that, so I'm working with Scott Traer. He's with Run Fasta, AH, cause he's originally out of Boston, like thick Boston accent. So Run Fasta, is his company. But so I specifically wanted somebody that has experience doing what I'm doing. So one, I want to go fast at 100 miles. So I wanted to find somebody that has experience training themselves to run or being trained to run fast for 100 miles. I wanted somebody that has some experience training or living at altitude. Right. Cause you know, if you're born and raised in Boston and only live in Boston, you might know the research of training and doing intervals at altitude. But until you truly know it, it's a different beast. So that was an element. Bonus points for having experience in any of these things in your late 30s, early 40s, right? Because I'm 37. I want to stay competing at a high level. I want to go fast. Javelin, I'll be 38, right? So that's different than training a 22-year-old to go fast at 100 miles. A little bit different.
Yep.
And then the final bonus was somebody that potentially had experience training athletes or racing themselves at Western States, because that is my goal. That's why I'm racing Javelina. And as I sat down and I compared all these things, Scott was like across the board. He checked all of those boxes for me. So when you think about a coach, think about the event you're doing and what experiences do you want? You can get a 100-mile coach that's never run 100 miles before, right? Like, I mean, the most famous coach in the ultra running scene right now is David Roche. He's never run 100 miles. He just ran his first 100K. But he trains, you know, a ton of people. And so full disclosure, I used to work with David Roche, and that was one of the biggest issues I had, is that when I asked him maybe race-specific questions about 100 miles and things like that, he had no firsthand knowledge. He would always say, well, the research says this. It's like, well, at some point I inherently want you to have that knowledge. So determine, as you're thinking about a coach, are those conversations important? Somebody that can say, I've been through this, I experienced this, and this is what you might expect, or somebody that can only say, oh, you know, the athletes I've coached or the trends say this. So that's one thing. And then just understand their training methodologies, right? Like every good coach should be able to tell you, you know, length of time for training blocks, types of training, what they're going to do to help you with your VO2 max and your lactate threshold. They should be able to answer those questions. And then another big one is just asking the questions around lifestyle and how they are going to adapt to your lifestyle, because all of us can go out and buy a training plan for a marathon, right? That's a 0% adaptation to your lifestyle. But a good coach should be able to say, look, like, Joe, you travel a lot. So we can program, if, you know, days I know you're traveling, maybe a shorter run, and then the next day a little bit longer run. And you know, every weekend's not going to be exactly the same because you might be here, there, or everywhere. So those are all just, I think, really important considerations. Don't just look for the fast guy or the fast gal that has won a bunch of races. They might have no clue what they're doing because they've been told their entire career what to do. And there are a lot of really, really elite athletes that are not good coaches because they've never had to learn why they do something. Like, why am I doing 5x3 minute uphills? Well, that's a VO2 max workout. The elite athlete might not know that. So I think there's just really important conversations. And the most important thing is just talking to somebody and make sure that you like them, right? Like, you're going to be paying this person professionally to help you do something, and make sure that you vibe with them on a human level, because if you need something from them, you want to actually be able to have a conversation with somebody you like. So those are, I guess, my thoughts. And I obviously have gone through this very recently. And I full disclosure, I actually went through this process myself before Cocodona, and I had talked to Scott before Cocodona and said, like, hey, like, I would like help getting back, getting elite, keeping healthy, and getting basically to where he is today. And he's like, yeah, let's, you know, as soon as Cocodona is over, let's reach back out. But I went through that whole process, vetted what I wanted out of a coach, what experience I wanted, and had the conversations with him, only now to hire him and work with him.
Nice. Well, thanks for that advice. It's good. And we'll keep track of how you and Scott are doing. You know, the other big thing this month, of course, is Western States.
Yep.
You got snowpack up in the mountains. A lot of changes. You know, there were fires that changed the route. There's a lot of unknowns this year and a lot of different people. And I hear there's a rumor that you might actually be hanging out there.
I will be there as of like a couple days ago. Yeah. So I booked my flights. I'll be there Thursday through Sunday, just hanging out. I'm not racing. I'm not pacing. I'm literally just going to soak it in and experience it. So I'm very excited. So the biggest news to come out of Western States is that Adam Peterman is out, right? The defending champion has, I think it was a pelvic stress fracture or something happened, and he's out. So right away, there's a shakeup at the top. It's anybody's race. There's Hayden Hawks. There's Tom Evans, right? Like, I would say if I was forced to put a bet right now, I would pick Tom Evans as the 2023 Western States champion. It's hard to bet against that guy. There's this other guy, Danny Jones, that's training with Hayden, that he beat Hayden at, was it Tarawera or somewhere at the beginning of the year, head to head, beat him in the 100K. So, like, that's a guy that's stacked. There's 8 out of the 10 top 10 from last year returning. So it's, I mean, I'm obviously just speaking of the men's side right now, but it's that men's race is wide open. I would say Hayden is probably, just cause he was second, right? And he's Hayden Hawks. He's probably on paper the favorite, but man, I'm picking Tom Evans right now. I'll say it on record.
And so tell people a little bit about Western States 100.
Yeah, it is the 100 of hundreds, right? So is it with Gordy Howe, famously, there was a horse race that was 100 miles on the same trail, and Gordy bought a horse. He was training with the horse, and the horse was sick and wasn't able to do all the training. He was sold a bad horse, and so he felt bad for the horse and started doing a lot of that. He would get off the horse and then train with the horse, you know, to take some weight off. And then he had paid his fee with the horse and was planning to race with his horse, and this is what, like 1979, I want to say. Mm-hmm. And his horse got super sick and couldn't race, and so Gordy's like, well, I paid my money, I'm going to show up and see if they'll let me run the dang thing. And everybody's like, oh, you're absolutely insane. You're crazy. Like, this is the stupidest thing we've ever heard. you're crazy. And he convinced them to let him run. And long story short, he beat a bunch of the horses. He ran the 100 miles on what is now the Western States Trail. And it basically is the first established 100 mile race in the world. And that kind of not only created the sport, but it created the tradition of giving belt buckles to 100 milers. Because is the horse race. So like traditional like rodeos, cowboys and things like that, what do they get for winning? They get a belt buckle. So that in the nutshell is not only the history of modern 100 mile racing, but also like why the hell do you get a belt buckle at the finish line of a 100 mile race?
And it's in California, right?
Yep. So it starts in Olympic Village, so just outside of Tahoe or Truckee, and it goes to Auburn. It's point to point. It's a net downhill. It does have 18,000 feet of climbing, but it has more downhill than uphill. It's very snowy at the start and very, very hot for the rest of it. It's kind of definitely a hot weather race traditionally. And it's fast. I think Jim Walmsley's course record is low 14 hours, yep. Something like that. It's blazing fast. And Courtney DeWalter has the women's course record, I believe. And you know, she's back this year to defend her title. She's actually doing the double. We'll get into this maybe at a later episode. She's doing the Western Hard Rock double, just like 3 weeks apart. So, we'll see how her body holds up, but yeah, it'll be.
And it's one of these races that you have to apply through a lottery unless you're a elite pro and you put in your lottery tickets and remember, they do a drawing and you hope you get in for the next year. Unless, of course, you run Javelina and you come in first or second, you get a golden ticket.
Yeah, it's very hard to get into. There's a reason I'm going as a spectator and not as an athlete. It's basically there's four ways to get in. There's the lottery, right? So it's every year you put in the lottery and it's N to the N minus one, I think it is, something like that, number of tickets. So it's 1, 2, 4, 8, 16, whatever that extrapolates to over time. So the longer you're in the lottery, the more likely you are to get in. So it's not just, Leadville, for example, every year you have the same crappy odds now to get in, but that's one way. The second way is to win one of these golden ticket races or finish runner up, which is what I'm going for at Javelina. There's a handful of those around the country and around the world. The third way of getting in is to finish in the top 10. So that guarantees you entry into the next year's race. Those are the only guaranteed entries as far as finishers. And then the fourth way is to get a sponsor's exemption. So there is some sponsor slots. So, for example, I know Hoka, this year they got Hella Sadabi. I always mispronounce his last name. Hella Good. He's running Western under the Hoka badge. Heather Jackson, actually, she finished like fourth in Javelina. She was winning it for most of the race and ended up kind of blowing up, or third, or she just missed a golden ticket. And when Hoka, she's a Hoka athlete, saw her do that, they're like, nope, you're doing Western. So they gave her the slot. And then she turned around and I think Black Haney or something that would have gotten a golden ticket anyways, which is cool because then that slot trickled down. But those are the ways to get in. Hard. It's so hard. I mean, there are people that wait 10 years, 11 years to get in through the lottery. And I'm lucky I have a slight chance, right, of competing for a spot. Not everybody can say that. Most people are just every year. You have to you have to go out and do a 100 mile or 100K and get a qualifier every 2 years. So it's not like anybody can go out and, enter the lottery. It's a process to make sure that you're still qualified every year and can still get in. And then it used to be
4 years, nothing.
Yeah, you used to lose your tickets if you missed a year. So they just instituted your tickets stay with you. But I had built up to like 4 years, and then I did Spartathlon and Badwater and stuff, and those aren't qualifiers. And then I lost my qualifier, so I started like 2 years ago back at zero.
I think my Bighorn coming up is a qualifier. So, so I'll get a few more tickets, but I've been putting my name in.
You had Cruel Jewel as well. That was good for this year. That's a 2 year qualifier.
Oh, cool. Yes. I'll keep working it till one day, you know, I've never bought a lottery ticket to begin with. So this is my only lottery I'm ever.
Ah, funny. I buy one. If I find like pocket change or something, like $2 in my pocket, I'll buy a
lottery ticket.
I'll go buy a Powerball. It's like, well, it's $2 I didn't know I have. So might as well, basically you're giving it to the schools, but if I could turn it into a couple million, it'd be pretty nice.
It won't get you into Western states. So yeah, no. So it should be fun. It's in a couple of weeks. And you know what's really cool that's been happening, you know, for any of you listening who are Ultra fans, there's a lot more live coverage of Ultra marathons. Now, the funny part, right, like the first time, I don't know, Don, you're probably too young to remember this, but like when golf came on TV, people were like, who's going to watch golf on TV? Is there anything more boring than golf on TV? And now there's millions of people who watch golf on TV. And then it was the Tour de France. And they're like, who's going to watch people ride a bike for 6 hours? It's
right.
Boring. And now, you know, you got NBC covering the Tour de France. Now we're starting to see ultramarathons being covered, you know, in a, you know, like the dirtbag kind of way thing, but still fun. And you can catch some of these races on YouTube, and there's commentators, and there's, the best case, they have a drone here and a camera there, so you can watch it and sort of see what it's like. It's sort of fun to chase the spots and see what that's like. So yeah, Western State will be covered very soon.
Yeah. As we were talking, I just, you know, I did say I have no obligations, no commitments. I was like, well, let me practice what I preach and at least throw my name into the volunteer for the live stream and see if they need anybody to run with, you know, a camera or anything like that. So I just pulled that up. So I mean, maybe I'll be behind a camera on race day or do something with the live stream.
That'd be fun. That'd be fun to see. Yeah. So we'll get a good report out of you in a couple of weeks. You know, we're getting here into the summertime. So everyone should be getting out and, you know, doing your thing, whether that's a hike, a run, a walk, play pickleball. Oh, I did play pickleball for the first time recently. And I'm not sure I'm giving up ultra running for pickleball, but you know, it was
sort of in high school.
It was fun to try. But otherwise, yeah, good summer ahead. Bighorn in a week's time. We'll do an episode on that and then, you know, work on the summer plan here. So it's all good stuff, huh?
Yeah, we'll hear. I can't wait to hear more about your Bighorn plan, and I know your training is always a bit unorthodox for a lot of big mountain runners, but you somehow chug through and get it done. So I'll be here curious. We'll get more into your training and talk course and all that stuff with our good friend Chad next week, who's done Bighorn I think 4 or 5 times.
All right, we'll do that. Well, everyone, you know, come chase tomorrow with us. Have some great time on the trails. We'll see you soon.